Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, I've been promising you a football-centric show, and today, finally, I deliver. Mike Dettillier, a football analyst for WWL 870 in New Orleans. He's an NFL draft evaluator for SaintsReport.com and ESPN. He joins. We talk a lot of New Orleans Saints, Chicago Bears, Seattle Seahawks, San Francisco 49ers, LA Rams, a lot of NFL. In about almost a 50-minute visit with Mike Dettillier. So we'll get to that in a minute. I think you'll really enjoy it. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford, just next door to the Oxford Crystal. It's the place to go. Next door to the Oxford Exxon, I should say. You can fill up at the Oxford Exxon and then fill yourself up at the Oxford Crystal. They have the $3 meal deal right now featuring the Chipotle Cheese Crystal. You can spice up all of your Crystal products, the Chipotle Cheese Crystal, the Chipotle Cheese Loaded Fries, the Red Hot Slushy. That's a slushy with, as you might expect, made with Red Hots. So if you want a little spice in your day as we get closer to the spring, Crystal's the place to go. And as always, you can get that 24-pack of Crystals. Maybe you're headed out to Swayze for Ole Miss Tennessee baseball this weekend. Maybe you're hanging out watching the NCAA tournament and you just want to make it easy. There's nothing easier than a 24-pack of Crystals, a party pack from the Oxford Crystal. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It is really that simple. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. And once you get your quote, you can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they have done for so many other listeners of our podcast, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. At the end of your deal, tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. It's a $500 discount on your already great deal from Clark Ford in Amory. We're also coming to you by the benefit of Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing there at Community Mortgage is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's that simple. All you have to do is send him an email, jlowe, that's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application with rates as low as 4.9%. Terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben at 443-935-5013. Ben's waiving the setup fee for Oxford Crystal Beer Garden listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. And now our interview with Mike Dettillier of WWL in New Orleans. Enjoy. All right, Mike. I'm going to start with the Saints, but I'm going to go down a personal rabbit hole here that I really wish I wouldn't do. But I saw the other day on Twitter, Harrison Barnes of the Mavericks, used to play for the Warriors, made a comment that, you know, if looking back on the 2016 NBA season, that the best team was the Thunder. I'm a Thunder fan. He said that, you know, had Klay Thompson not gone crazy, the Thunder would have won that series. They would have won the NBA championship, blah, blah, blah. I'm curious with the Saints, now that it's all said and done, if the crazy final play in Minnesota doesn't happen, are the Saints Super Bowl champs right now?
Listen, the way the Eagles played the week afterwards, I'm not sure anybody beats them that day. That was just one of those games where no matter what the Vikings did, the Eagles had a counter for it. And so there's a lot of ifs and buts in the sports world, political world, every other world. But looking back at it, that game would have been a really difficult game based on just how well the Eagles' all-around game was, which was terrific against the Vikings. And you're talking about a team that had basically shut the door on almost everyone all season long defensively. And they were shredded apart that day by the Eagles. So to answer the question, you never want to lose an opportunity. And that's the thing that you don't know if you'll walk that aisle again.
Right.
And it's a tough loss for them, really tough. And it's going to be a little bit of a mental ditch to get that out of your way. But to say that that team would have been Super Bowl champs, that's a tough one. Because of the obstacle the week afterwards in Philly against a team that day looked to be almost unstoppable by anyone. And then 2 weeks later, they beat the team that with all that experience, with the greatest quarterback of all time, arguably, and in a shootout game. So that's a tough question to answer. But I just feel as though it's a real difficult time when you're put in that spot and you're just one play away to get over that real quickly. That's a lot easier said than done. And I think that's the challenge for Sean Payton in 2018. As much as the three straight 7-9 seasons were to get over, and he got certainly helped by a tremendous draft class and a good free agency crop. That one game, you've got to be able to hurdle that. And that means winning a game late, early in the regular season, that maybe you shouldn't win, and kind of put that game aside.
They certainly made a step in that direction. We all anticipated it would happen. Drew Brees signs a two-year deal to stay in New Orleans. We all knew that he would. I guess that extends the window another year or two. What were your thoughts on Brees, the contract, and then where do the Saints go now in free agency? What's left for them to do?
Well, I've always felt, it's almost like kind of reading a history book. You knew kind of where Drew was going to go with this. He had the tea leaves were set in place just by the talk of the Saints, kind of front office brass, Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton, before all this went down, and Drew's talk that this was going to get done. But if you knew history on it, it's always a late deal. And that's exactly what happened. So that was an easy read for me. Drew has always driven his own sort of boat. If you go back in 2006, Brees had a difficult decision to make when he left San Diego. And that he could have went at that time to a pretty hot Miami Dolphins team. With Nick Saban, and they had a pretty good run there toward the end of the 05 season with that group with Ricky Williams, Ronnie Brown. That defense was pretty good. And you got the 2006 Saints, the 6 months after Katrina had passed. This was a football team on life support. And, yeah, it was a money decision at that time. But I think Drew also knew the implications of what he would mean to that franchise. And so he decided to sign with the Saints instead of the Dolphins. A lot of people, he took the more money. Well, that's true, but where was the franchise to start the 2006 season in comparison to what the Dolphins
they were
had?
Almost on their way out of New Orleans, yeah.
Exactly. You go back to 2012. He made a statement that year, basically. This is less than a year after the lockout, which was short-lived, but still it was what it was. The Saints, again, you could tell by the talk, there was friction in the camp between the Saints and Drew Brees. Drew is heavily involved in the NFLPA, and I think he wanted to make a statement at that point, and he did by becoming the highest-paid quarterback at that moment. And I think he set precedent for the other quarterbacks that have followed him, that he was going to put that at a high limit. He had been franchise tagged a couple times, and basically he was going to get what he was going to get out of this. And I think he drove his own kind of boat again on this deal. To say that this is, he set a precedent by what he did, you don't read or you don't understand history. He's always done it. He's always had full control of what he wanted to do as a player. And I think he took less money to sign with the Saints. He's 39 years old. He's been with Sean Payton since 2006. Take this the right way. They almost like a married couple, where they can almost finish each other's sentences. That's how close they are. And I think at this point in his career, I think because so many times we've seen people leave in pro football, or it doesn't really matter if it's the NBA or Major League Baseball, to take a few extra bucks somewhere else to finish out their career. And I think for Drew, he felt comfortable here. He still is such a big part of the community. But Drew's also pragmatic, and he's smart. He's got some pretty good talent around him with two young superstar-type players in Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram in the backfield with Alvin. Four of his five starting offensive linemen are 26 years of age or younger. He's got the veteran center in Max Unger. That's a pretty good recipe there. Yeah, you could have made a few more dollars somewhere else, but I do know living in Louisiana is a lot cheaper than living in Los Angeles or Denver, Colorado, or New York City. So, you know, the big thing about, you know, he overseeded his agent. He's always done it. He's always had the final say. If you go back to 06, you don't think his agent was in his ear to, hey, go to Miami. Look the opportunities maybe commercially you have in Miami in compared to New Orleans.
Oh, sure.
Even though they're offering more money. In 2012, he made that statement that he was going to be the highest paid guy, and he got it. And he made his statement again this year, and that he wanted to be part of this franchise. He knows that they have an opportunity here with a good young football team, and he's surrounded by some pretty good talent that, you know what, if breaks go your way, you got a shot to roll for another Super Bowl run. But, yeah, you know, he gave them enough money in the type deal that he did to free them up to go out in the free agency world to land, you know, some people that can help you on both sides of the football. And, you know, he's changed this football world in New Orleans. Some people don't like because he's made all this money. My thing is, in your profession, let me see you take a 5% or 10% pay cut to help someone else.
No way. No,
Very few people would do it.
No, absolutely. And you know, and I mean, even if he walked away today, you think about what his legacy is in the city of New Orleans, what his legacy is in the NFL, in the state of Louisiana, what he's meant for those people. It is, it's almost difficult to put a number on it, to enumerate. It's impossible, really.
I think, you know, I don't agree with everything my old friend Colin Cowherd says, but I think yesterday he had a piece on Fox, and he was dead right about it, that timing is everything in life for all of us, for jobs, personal, whatever. And Drew just so happened to be playing the same time as Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. And you think about at another time and another place, where Drew Brees would be on the list if, you know, he were a little younger or a little older or whatever. You know, he played in the same kind of run as Brady and Manning, where they grabbed the majority of the headlines of because of what they did. And you just see what Drew did to change this franchise, which was, you know, a bottom barrel team for many, many years, other than you could say that run that Jim Finks, Jim Mora had. This team had struggled to gain any sort of consistency in the winning standpoint. And I think for some people a certain age, they don't remember that. But, man, before that, they had not posted a winning season from 1967 to 1986. That's a long stretch in the NFL to not have a winning season. And then, you know, Mora and Finks changed the dialogue there. But I think Drew's legacy is still yet to be written with this franchise. But again, he is what he is. He's been the face of the franchise in a league that has become, it's become difficult to do that because free agency has changed the world completely. And player hopping from one team to the next, a lot of money jumping and signing contracts that you're going to get paid the maximum. And, you know, I think if money's close, then most people, they're going to pick the team that they have a shot to win, possible Super Bowl or get into the playoffs with. But in the most part, their loyalty is to that, you know, dead president's printed on paper. In this part here, Drew did the Saints a little bit of a favor because of the fact that, you know, he wanted to stay here and he took less money, and it was a good deal for both of them. But and again, Drew's a real sharp guy now, and he understands, you know, I think his legacy as a football player. But if you don't think he means so much to this team, listen to the words of Zach Streif when he retired and how much he talked about Drew Brees. And I think that was the greatest testimony to what type of player and what he means to this franchise. So, yeah, you got a 2-year window now with a young football team. Now they got to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
You got to make your own breaks because nobody gives you anything. And in the NFL, man, I cringe every time I hear a reporter or somebody, and I heard it last night, and I just shook my head about this great team of 2018. You never stay the same. Either you get better or you get worse. There's only two things that have stayed constant in football. One in college has been Alabama. One in the NFL, the New England Patriots. Everybody else has taken a little bit of a roller coaster ride throughout the process. Nothing's going to stay the same. And while you might think you got a lot of talent and you're going to get right back to where you are, nothing's guaranteed. And so that's why you always got to keep, you know, kind of adding to the pile. Football-wise, adding to what you've got, either through free agency, trades, or the draft. And I think with Drew, he's given that opportunity that, you know, if you want to go out and get a couple free agents, I've made it up giving you that opportunity to do so.
What specifically should they go? If you're Mickey Loomis, you're in that front office, you're trying to round out what should be on paper a very good football team, where are you looking?
First of all, I would like to get myself a big defensive lineman. They're the hardest people to get at any college and pro football. The funniest thing is I had this conversation with Coach Orgeron the day after he took the job at LSU. And I told him, you know, what he was talking about the quarterback situation. And I told him, you will find the next Tom Hodson, Jamarcus Russell in college before you're going to find the next Arden Key, Barkevious Mingo. And he laughed when I told him that, but it was, I think it's accurate. Those guys are difficult to find. I think 7-on-7 has changed the football world completely.
Yeah, no doubt.
And that 6'3", 6'4" guys that are in high school today, they don't want to play defensive end or rush the quarterback. You know, they want to play wide receiver or tight end.
Yeah.
I want to catch the ball. That's what I want to do. And so where are they? You know, find them. They're becoming much more difficult to get your hands on, and that's just not short-term. That's long-term. That's just not for 2018, 2019. That's for a considerable period of time. And so if you get a chance, you might have to overpay for a veteran defensive lineman. And, you know, that's why, you know, you got a guy like Muhammad Wilkerson kind of ran the trail a little bit and went to, you know, four different places before he signed on with Green Bay. You got a couple guys out there, Sheldon Richardson and Ndamukong Suh, that I would have some interest in because of the fact you just can't find those big guys out there anymore. And they want to do a one-year contract, I'm all in for it. The other part is at tight end. Because of the fact that, you know, they made a run towards Jimmy Graham, and I knew once he got to the $10 million mark, that wasn't going to work. They weren't going to pay that kind of money for a 31-year-old tight end who's had a serious knee injury. And, you know, if this was a $7.5 million, $8.5 million deal, that's one thing. But once you get to the 10 mark, that was really high. And the Packers really wanted him. They felt he was a big piece to what Aaron Rodgers wants to do offensively, and I can understand that. But I think tight end, when you look at this team and you look at Drew, you go back in his history for Antonio Gates and what he did when he first started with the Chargers. The Saints going out and get Jeremy Shockey with this, you know, when they made the Super Bowl run. David Thomas was a good player. What Jimmy did when he was here, which was he put up unbelievable numbers that for a tight end had not been seen before in NFL history for his first few years in the league. Ben Watson coming in here. Ben had been a little bit of a journeyman player, had not put up great numbers. And then he comes in here and, you know, he kind of lights it up with the Saints. That's a spot for me that when you look at it, in veteran free agency, and there's still a couple guys out there. Now, depending on what they want financially, like an Austin Seferian Jenkins, who's had, a roller coaster career, Tyler Eifert with Cincinnati, who's been a good football player, but he's had a lot of injuries. And I would be careful about doing anything long-term with him. But I do think that there are people out there that could really help your team as a tight end to be able to stretch the field. And that's what this football team really needs. You look back at third down conversions last year, they were either one or two in third down conversions five out of the last 6 years. Then last year they finished 16th or 17th. They were right almost smack dab in the middle on third down. That has a lot to do with the fact you didn't have a big target guy that could stretch the middle of the field. And Fleener was a major, it's been a major disappointment. No question about that. And I think, you know, looking at this, he may be a post, depending on what happens in the free agency in the draft, he may be a post June 1st cut, so to speak. But it's something that's missing from this offense. And in the same way, you never have enough defensive linemen and cover people. And that's also an area that I would try to address with a veteran at the cornerback position. With the release of Delvin Bro, you have a spot here where you're looking for a third guy, a guy that can play in the slot. And I always feel about this. You're going to pay a lot of money in this league for young players who are talented. That's a given in free agency. What you have to be careful for, and the biggest mistakes the Saints have made, have been paying for veteran players who are at their trail end of their career.
Yeah, paying for past
results.
And
have had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
You better have, you know, to me, a vision on what you want to do for that veteran player. Because, I mean, sometimes veterans don't like to hear this comment, but I think it's true. You're a rent player in the NFL for a year or two. You're not a long-term guy. You're a rent player. And that every team's got them. Everybody's got them. And sometimes it's double digits. You got guys that are up in age and because of some injury issues are brought in to fill in a specific need. And I think at this point, a veteran cornerback has to be looked at because look at the youth you have in the secondary. Lattimore is coming off his rookie season. Ken Crawley's coming off his second year. P.J. Williams is actually a third-year guy, but he missed one full season due to an injury. You got Von Bell, who's going to be entering his third year, and Marcus Williams is entering his second. It was a big part of why they brought in Kurt Coleman from the Carolina Panthers to bring some veteran leadership and some veteran experience in the secondary. And that's why I think the Saints will try to make a move for a veteran cornerback also.
We take a break from our interview with Mike Dettillier to tell you that the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden is also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. That's the number. Call Greg Jones. Tell Greg what you want. He'll have it lined up and ready for you when you come into the store, or you can do what I like to do, which is just go in and browse. They've got all of the fresh cuts in Oxford, the freshest cuts you can find anywhere in Oxford or the surrounding area. They've got the prime and upper choice USDA grade beef, exclusive grass-fed naked beef from Joyce Farms. They've got the free-range Joyce Farm chicken, and they've got the locally raised pork from Home Place Pastures in Como. They've got some of the best sausages. We tell you about it all the time. Fresh fish from the Gulf of Mexico, grouper, snapper, redfish, salmon, whatever you want, they can get it or they have it there at LB's. Follow LB's Food Truck on Twitter. That's LB's Food Truck on Twitter. If you're coming up for the weekend, Ole Miss in Tennessee, if you're just driving around town, know where LB's Food Truck is set up. Whether it's just a lunch, whether it's a pregame snack, a post-party snack, there's nothing better than what you'll find on the LB's Food Truck. 662-259-2999 is the number to LB's. So we're going to give away a $25 gift certificate to LB's to the first person who can answer this trivia question. It's about the New Orleans Saints. Get a trivia question. Get it correct. You got to tweet the answer at me, at Neil McCready, at LB's Food Truck, hashtag Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Actually, do this. Tweet it at me, at LB's, at Oxford Crystal, and then hashtag Beer Garden with the answer. So here's the question. What quarterback played for the Saints for 5 years wearing number 2? He led the Saints to their first ever playoff victory in 2000. Tell me his name. That's all you got to do. This quarterback played for the Saints for 5 years. Wore number 2, led the Saints to their first ever playoff victory in 2000. Send that answer to me on Twitter. It's worth a $25 gift certificate to LB's Meat Market in Oxford. The podcast also brought to you
by strategic partners in media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here is why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. Lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Now back to our interview with Mike Dettillier on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden.
I want to touch on a few other teams in the handful of minutes we have left with you. The Bears, Chicago Bears, very active early this week. Allen Robinson, Burton, the tight end from Philly, Trey Burton. They went out and got Gabriel, the wide receiver from Atlanta. How much of that is just them filling need, and how much of that is a reflection on perhaps the way the league views the young quarterback, Mitch Trubisky?
Well, when you give up that much capital for a quarterback, you better surround him. And he had virtually nothing around him last year. Jordan Howard, who was a really good running back, is and Cohen, you know, who's change of pace back, that's what they had. In the pitch and catch game, they've had virtually nothing. And so to bring in Allen Robinson, who's been a good player when he's been healthy, but he's had a lot of downtime with injuries. Trey Burton's an interesting player in that, you know, man, I knew his grandfather, Larry, when he was a first-round pick of the Saints. and Trey, he bounced all around at Florida as a halfback, wide receiver, H-back, tight end. He was all over the place. And he finally found his niche with Doug Peterson's offense. And he wasn't the starter there. But, you know, he was a really good stretch guy. He could catch the football well. And you can see where Ryan Pace, who was with the Saints and now is a GM with the Bears, he's trying to put the pieces around Mitchell Trubisky. Because if not, you know, you've spent a lot of capital and you got to give him some weapons to work with at this point. So I think every team, again, they see the arms race, which is going on in the NFC today. You look at what Minnesota did to spend their money on a veteran quarterback. You're not going to win a playoff game on a miracle play every year. And they felt as though Kirk Cousins gives them a much better chance to win than Case Keenum. And you're also going to have a healthy Dalvin Cook back for 2018. And he was on a roll until he hurt his knee. You look at the Packers, you know, with Aaron Rodgers. Now they bring in Muhammad Wilkerson on defense, Jimmy Graham on offense. You look at the NFC South with those three teams in New Orleans, Atlanta, Carolina, who are all really good. The Rams aren't sitting on their laurels. And they go out and they pick up Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, you know, at cornerback. The 49ers are not going to be an easy out with Jimmy Garoppolo, and they've added to their roster. So you can see where you got to keep up here. And that's what the Bears are trying to do. They're trying to keep up with everybody else and trying to add players in a very contested NFC conference as a whole, that if you're not adding to the cart, you've fallen further and further and further back. And I do think the coaching changes in the NFC also has something to do with it. You see a much more aggressive and younger group of GMs and head coaches, and their feeling is, we got some impatient owners in a new world that they don't want to hear about rebuilding for 3 years. You better win, and you better win quick.
Let me ask you about Seattle. I mean, the list of people that are gone, Graham, Sherman, Bennett, Tom Cable, Daryl Bevel, Heath Farewell, Travis Jones, looks like Cam Chancellor's probably gone, Sheldon Richardson, Earl Thomas, his days might be numbered. Are they? Is this Seattle's way of saying, "Hey, our window has closed. It's time to tear it down"?
Pretty much. You know, this band is not going to play the same music anymore. I mean, you got a lot of new musicians playing in the group, and so, you know, this is a Herculean effort that you're going to be seeing out in Seattle to try to rebuild this team. You know, Pete Carroll and John Snyder have done a great job. They've had a hard run with the group. And defensively, I think we're going to look back at history and you're going to look at that Seattle defense and say, man, you know, they kind of changed the way the NFL looks in their aggressive style of play and how they play defensively. They certainly changed the NFL and how the game is called defensively because of what they did. They kind of beat you up with their cornerbacks and safeties, and it sort of changed the rules a few years back on it. But, you know, that band's not going to play again. And the effort's going to be is how quickly it's going to get to rebuild. You're talking about a big chunk of your defense gone. And that fueled what you didn't have on offense. They've never been the same since Marshawn Lynch retired from Seattle in the running game. The offensive line play has been god-awful. You know, losing Max Unger in the trade with Jimmy Graham really took a toll on them. And they've not been able to rebuild that offensive line. Russell Wilson have saved their bacon more than one time because of how good of a player he is, but they don't have a signature runner. Their offensive line is not even average in the NFL. And now you've gotten a defense that you've gotten rid of all the star players with the exception of Bobby Wagner and Earl Thomas. And Earl wants out. And so you got a spot here. You're talking about a major rebuilding job and a lot of pressure. Pete Carroll and John Snyder have it. Because Seattle fans, now you've gotten them accustomed to winning and winning big and playing for, you know, NFC West titles and beyond. And you don't want to say it, but you know it's accurate. They're rebuilding is the most dreaded word in sports for any fan to hear.
Oh, sure.
Rebuilding.
Yeah.
And no one wants to hear that. And so, but that's what you got in Seattle. Because this will not take just one season. You can't lose, you know, that much talent and think, I can get that all back in one offseason. It's not going to happen.
In that same division, the Rams obviously are going to be everybody's sexy Super Bowl pick. They certainly looked great last year, got knocked off predictably in the first round. They have to kind of start bracing for what's to come, though, don't they, Mike? I mean, Jared Goff, Aaron Donald, Todd Gurley, those guys are all going to be due max deals or something close to it here fairly soon. How are they sort of approaching the short term as opposed to the long term?
Well, I always believe this, that if you draft well, then you're getting people in at football minimum wage. I guess the best term to use it. You're getting them in at a pretty cheap price for at least 3 years. And so it gives you an opportunity to accumulate money to keep your own people. It's happened in Minnesota, and now that they've spent money on a quarterback, it'll be interesting to see how all that cap space, you know, when you got to sign your own top defensive players, how that's going to come into play. But, again, it goes back to the most important piece of the puzzle, and that's the draft. If you draft well, it gives you an opportunity to go out and fill some holes in free agency. It also gives you an opportunity to keep your own people that you think are quality. You're right about it. They've got the top young coach in Sean McVay. And one thing with Wade Phillips, man, he's just a great job on defense. As a coordinator, he's had magic almost everywhere he's went in turning teams around. How that mix in the locker room is going to be now, I think, is interesting. because you brought in some pretty strong personalities into the group here on defense, especially in the secondary. I think signing long-term deals, I think that, you know, I think the Rams will do okay there. But again, what you've got to do is to make sure you can keep Jared Goff upright for a period of time. So that means getting some help along the offensive line and giving him, I think, a big play guy on offense. Because you lost Sammy Watkins, who to me, man, listen, Kansas City paid a lot of money for a guy that's still, in my mind, a potential player. He's never hit full stride in the NFL, either due to an injuries or whatever. But the Rams are a good team, well-coached, a lot of talent, but they're not sneaking up on anybody in 2018. You know, they're the real McCoy, and everybody knows what you what you're going to be braced for. But they're a well-coached team, and they'll win a lot of games. And they're going to have the cap money to sign the Aaron Donalds and Goffs of the world when kind of their time comes. I think the team to watch out west is San Francisco because of Garoppolo. And I think that may go down as one of the best trades of the last 10, 12 years in the NFL, getting him for a second-round pick. How well John Lynch can draft again is going to be a major part of, you know, maybe continual success that they had late last year with that football team. But they play some good football out in San Francisco. And I know one thing. I put Kyle Shanahan in that top three as far as offensive play callers in the NFL today. Or top four, I should say. I think along with Sean Payton and Mike McCartney at Green Bay and McVay in Los Angeles, I think Kyle's right there with him as a play caller.
Yeah.
And now he's got the young quarterback, and let's see if he can get, you know, some speed people out on the edge to help him. And also they need a running game. Haven't lost Carlos Hyde. McKinnon's a good back, but he's, to me, he's part of a rotation in the backfield to run the football. So I'd keep my eyes on San Francisco because that seems to be a team that really made some strides late last year, and they put up over 40 points against a really good Jacksonville defense.
You've been super generous with your time. You mentioned Garoppolo. We'll finish with quarterbacks. Kind of twofold thing here. What do you think happens with Nick Foles coming off the Super Bowl MVP performance? God, he was great. You see how poised he was. Obviously, it's a quarterback-driven league. His stock is high. If you're Philly, you're not necessarily motivated to give him away with Wentz coming back from the ACL. And then your thoughts on these quarterbacks at the top of the draft, and the one that I'm most fascinated by is Baker Mayfield, who it certainly appears from – the outside looking in that his stock is starting to sort of skyrocket as we get closer to the draft.
Well, I think with Nick Foles, if I'm the Eagles, he's more valuable to me than he is to another team unless somebody's willing to give me up a ransom in return. I'm not sure when Carson Wentz is going to return. I hope he's back for week one, but there's no guarantee of that. At this stage, that was a pretty serious knee injury he had. You know, modern medicine is unbelievable. It's probably the thing that has changed the most since I've been doing this over 30 years, and how quickly guys can come back from major injuries. But when you have that sort of knee injury, it's going to take a little while. My gut feeling is that he stays with the Eagles, at least for the first part of the season, until Wentz can return. And this might sound morbid, but if I'm the Eagles, then I'm looking around because eventually it's going to happen to someone. They're going to lose a starting quarterback to an injury. We saw it happen a couple years ago when Teddy Bridgewater went down in a practice. And the Vikings were caught. They had no choice. They had to go out and get a quarterback, and they gave up quite a bit to bring in Sam Bradford. who I think is a good football player. He just can't stay healthy. He can throw the rock. It's just the problem is he's not been shown that he can kind of stand upright for any length of time throwing the football. So if I'm the Eagles, he's mine. I keep him. And if something happens during the season to another quarterback, I'm going to get some calls, and I'm going to get a lot back in return for Nick Foles. But he's much more valuable to me because of the fact that Wentz is no guarantee that he's going to be back for week one. And so I keep him unless some team's willing to give me up a huge ransom in return for him, and I don't see that today. On the college quarterbacks getting into the draft, I think Sam Darnold's the top guy. He's not ready for prime time yet, but I think he's got all the tools to be a really good player. I think someone will fall in love with Josh Allen because of his arm.
He scares me so much.
I can understand that, but man, he's got a rifle, and I think especially if you're a Northeastern team,
yeah,
and you're going to throw in some bad weather games, that he would fit in there really, really well. And so I could see a team like the Jets or maybe even Buffalo making a play for him real early in the draft. And then I think the two of the three most polarizing players in this draft class, I think Arden Key is on defense. I don't think there's any debate on that. But I think on offense, Josh Rosen to me is every bit as polarizing a prospect as Baker Mayfield. I think a lot of NFL teams don't want to say it, but I think it's accurate because of his personality. And you know, almost a little bit adrift from his own team at times. And he's also rail thin. He's had a lot of injuries at UCLA. And that concerns me, too, that his body build, he's not going to get much thicker than what he is. He is what he is as a build guy. So I think you're going to have a lot of debate on Josh Rosen also. Baker Mayfield, there's no gray area about him. Either you like him or you don't.
Love him or hate him, it's bizarre, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that it's either you like him or you don't. There's no gray area with him. He's shorter than most quarterbacks, but I think, you know, with Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, they've kind of put that notion aside. He can play. And the thing that jumps out at me about him is how accurate he is throwing the football from the pocket. Now, DeFore, there's no question who's the most accurate passer, and it's Baker Mayfield. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, when you watch all four of them play, who is the most accurate of the four from the pocket? And it's Mayfield. And he throws a real catchable ball. You're talking about a guy who's played. He started at Texas Tech and 3 years at Oklahoma. And his completion rank is a little bit under 70%. That's astounding at the collegiate level.
I know.
When you're throwing 70% completion rate. And throughout your career, I'm not talking about 1 year. I'm talking about almost every year, you're right at that mark or better. And so I think he ends up being a top 10 pick. Because somebody, you know, listen, this isn't running for the Senate. You don't have to carry every precinct. You just got to have one pick you. And I think somebody's going to say, you know what? He's cocky, he's arrogant, he's got a chip on his shoulder, and he'll have that to the day he dies, but he's not Johnny Manziel. He didn't grow up in that environment, and the one negative I see with him, and I love his competitiveness as a player, but I also think if I had that as a linebacker or a safety, you know, I'm not too worried about it. But as a quarterback, you've got to be the coolest cat in the room. And I think sometimes he lets his emotions get the best of him. And that trash talking he did in college, you try that in the NFL, man, they're going to be peeling you off of the turf.
Yeah, and your teammates won't like that at the pro level either. Your teammates are not – That was popular at OU with his teammates, because his teammates would run through a wall for him. At the NFL level, some vets are going to say, "Hey, young fella, that won't work here."
Now, if you win, they'll run through the wall for you. And I think it won't take long. I think his adjustment to the NFL is going to be pretty quick. It's funny, I got to talk to him twice at the Manning camp, and he talked about growing up in Austin, Texas, and he didn't go to the same high school as Drew Brees, but he talked about how Drew Brees was an idol for him. He also talked about he always wanted to play for OU, which is, you hear somebody from Austin, Texas, he grew up an Oklahoma fan. His dad was a quarterback at Houston, so it was sort of a strange little ride, but you could see his competitive nature in the fact that, I think all his life people talked about he was too short, couldn't play, too small. And I think he's held that as a chip on his shoulder in very much the same manner Drew Brees did. Now, the one thing with Drew, he's competitive as Baker, but his emotions doesn't get away with him. And that's the one thing we've seen with Mayfield. Listen, we've all done stupid things when we're teenagers in early 20s. Him getting maybe a little bit too much fire water one night and doing what he did. Those things happen sometimes.
Sure.
It happens to the best of us. Listen, we do dumb things in our 50s. When you're that young, you start to think you may be a little bit bulletproof. But in that sort of spot, the biggest negative for me is his emotions. And he's got to understand he cannot let that get carried away in an NFL game. You can kind of fuel your engine with your emotions, but you can't be doing this trash talking. You can't be doing some of the things you did in college, because these are the NFL. And these guys, man, they ain't playing around. And it's a far different league for him, and I think he'll find that out. Whoever picks him better decide that they're going to play him pretty quick, because he's not sitting and watching for anybody. If you pick him, you better be able to say, we're going to play him real quick, because he's not going to take being on the bench for long. Now, that's a little different from a personality standpoint than Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, who I think would accept a backup role early and then get groomed into that spot. If they were put into that position, they would be the starter, but they're not going to kick about being a backup. I think with Baker, I'll say the same thing about Rosen. I think he wouldn't like it too. I think he would squawk about it big time. When you pick him, you better be ready to play him and play him fast, because he's not going to accept that backup role.
Well, Mike, it's great stuff, man. No one knows football better than you do. And college game, pro game, I could pick your brain for hours. But we'll hopefully do it again sometime soon. Thanks so much for the sort of the NFL free agency and draft recap there as we get started. As the free agency's going, the draft around the corner, it's always great to talk to you, and I really appreciate the time.
Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it, buddy.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye. Our thanks to Mike for joining us on the show today. Hope you all enjoyed all the NFL talk. The draft is about a month away. Free agency ongoing. I thought it was a really good time to do an NFL show, so I hope you enjoyed it. Major League Baseball season 2 weeks away. Everyone's in spring training in Florida and Arizona, so we'll focus on baseball next week on the Beer Garden. Brendan Schaefer will join us. He covers the St. Louis Cardinals for KMOV in St. Louis. My friend Brett Taylor, who covers the Chicago Cubs for Bleacher Nation, he'll join us as well. We'll touch a little NFL with him as he branches out into the Chicago Bears and talks about them as well. So we'll have a baseball-centric show next week on the Beer Garden. Our thanks to Mike Dettillier for his time today on the show. And until then, have a great weekend. Take care.